This hour of Overdrive is powered by Muskoka Woods. This summer, let your child experience an overnight camp like no other. Let the adventures begin at MuskokaWoods.com.
Big one this afternoon. Big, big show this afternoon.
And I'll tell you one thing. Jonas Siegel is not getting the coronavirus on our watch. He had the Lysol wipes. He wiped down the mic, the table, everything. He's ready to rock, and no coronavirus for him.
Don't you get that impulse, though, like when you're on a plane? When you just sit down, it's kind of gross, and there's like crumbs. Don't you just want to like clean up and make sure you don't catch anything?
Dude, I have the same clothes on I wore yesterday. I don't care about stuff like that.
Are you actually wearing the same clothes?
Well, the clothes I wore. I went to Collingwood. I went to the cottage. I put the same clothes. Who cares?
You don't have any new clothes up in Collingwood? I actually have such a great appreciation for that honesty. I would have never known you wore that yesterday.
Dude, this is just my work stuff. That's in my locker room.
Oh, I see. So you go and you leave it, and then you get changed.
That's right.
Yeah.
I don't wear this around Collingwood, a shirt and a tie and a jacket. Like, what are you, drunk?
That's what I was wondering. Are you consistently in the same gear? Like, if someone spotted you in Collingwood this morning at, like, 10 a.m. at the Home Depot.
I would have blue jeans on, a suit jacket, and a tie and a dress shirt. Just doing my affairs with this on.
You could use some help. You need a personal assistant, maybe.
I saw that yesterday.
Yeah. We asked JVR.
If you were a pro hockey player, which you would never be,
well, that's...
would you have an assistant to take care of your affairs? It's a busy life.
Can I just add, like, what does the assistant do?
Stuff that you don't have time for.
Like change your oil kind of thing?
Hey, maybe.
Well, maybe bring your car in.
Bring your car in for service.
Yeah.
Have groceries in the fridge. And when you're on the road and they expire, you get rid of them, put new stuff in. Dry cleaning. Have the house cleaned. Take the dog out if you got a dog.
Basically open-ended. Like, if anything you need done. Like, it sounds actually like a great idea.
I just picture, you know those... it's for one of those takeout food services with John Hamm. Do you know the commercials
skip
I'm talking about?
Yeah, skip the
dishes. It's like that guy, his assistant. That's what I picture for you. Maybe you should start a business and just
source it's embarrassing I'm even talking about it because my personal assistant was stealing money from me, and that's how it came up.
He got fired.
She
got fired.
Yeah.
All right.
Stealing.
What percentage of the league do you think has personal assistants?
15.
Seriously, that many?
You got to make a certain amount of money for it to make sense. Like, I don't think Pierre Engvall got his new deal and immediately started the hiring process.
I was making $3 million a year.
Yeah, but that was 20 years ago.
That was a big cake back then.
That's big money. Like, it's still massive money today, but in the year 2000, $3 million with inflation, what is that?
And I told you how I caught her. She was mixing in her... And this is the stupid... This is how athletes become broke. I said, here's a checkbook. You have open access to it. You can write whatever, like, just write yourself the checks. I'll sign them. So I went through the checks because I never did. I'm like, no, nothing's going to happen, and I wouldn't know if it was gone anyway. So I was going through the checks, and you know me. I went from my bedroom to the living room. That's it. I ate in the living room. I lived there, and I don't live like a pig. Like, I kind of cleaned up, tidied up.
Yeah.
She charged herself $500 to clean my place. $500? I only went in two rooms.
Well, I think they still, like, they clean everywhere.
Dude,
even if you don't
there was
it.
Nothing to clean.
No, I understand that, but it's blatantly malpractice or whatever you want to call it. Like, that's clearly an injustice. No one is charging $500 unless you're cleaning, you know, Queens Park. Or something like that. There isn't a house. Maybe houses in Rosedale or in the Bridal Path or something.
And guess
maybe.
What? She'd clean it on Wednesday. She'd have to clean it again on Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right.
Well, listen, you got through it. It's all good. Jonas is in here from The Athletic. You got your whole station over there. It's been sanitized.
It's clean.
And you're clean.
No coronavirus for him.
Do you bring spray then, like when you go on a plane?
No, so this has been a thing. So now my girlfriend packs me those wet... What are they called? Like wet ones?
Like a wet wipe.
Naps.
Yeah, and she wants me to wipe it down when I sit down, and I feel a little funny doing
that. So that little routine you just pulled on before we went on the
I just do it here because it's gross.
No, you were instructed to do that?
No, I do this on my own.
Where do you guys stand on this big viral conversation about reclining your seat on an airplane?
Oh, it's absolutely no go. And you know what I do? I shove them. Every time.
How do you have the right to do that?
Every chance I get, I push.
Why?
Because who are you to lean your seat back?
Who are you to decline a reclining?
You're getting
maneuver?
In my space.
So I what? Think, get in somebody else's
space. I gotta
be honest.
I think this conversation's gotten way too much play. Like, where, who started this? Paul Bissonnette?
No, there's a video that started it. There was a video that, there it is right there. This guy was on the last row, so he doesn't have the ability to recline. This woman reclined her seat, and the guy went on to punch the back of her seat repeatedly throughout the flight, which he is such a goon, that guy.
Look, if the seats recline on the seat or in the plane, you're allowed to do it.
Of course you are.
So if someone does it, shut up and deal with it.
Exactly. I've had people recline. I'm a tall guy. If you recline on me, I'm in big trouble. I don't have much room.
And you're happy about it.
I'm not happy, but it's not my right to say you can't do it. That's your seat. You paid for it.
I wouldn't mind a little bit of this. Hey, do you mind if I recline?
Okay, sure. Common courtesy.
And I would say maybe, but just if you go all the way back, you're jamming me up.
Okay, what if you ask me, hey, do you mind if I recline? I say, no, I don't want you to. You're going to recline anyway.
No.
Yes, you are.
No, you're not.
You are asking based on common courtesy with the expectation that the person is naturally going to say, yes, please, thank you for asking.
I have one policy for situations like that, and it goes like this. If I think I can beat the person up, then I'll play a tough game. But if I don't, like if it was Grappler, and he, I would be like, you do whatever you want. But if it was him, Jonas, I'd be like, dude, get your seat up and smarten up.
I just don't understand who made the rule that all of a sudden you can't recline.
You know what
seat.
It is? Because we live in a society and it's common courtesy. If you do it, then I have to do it. Then the person behind has to do it.
Fine.
And everybody suffers.
No, we
you
live
don't
in
travel
a
as much as I do.
We live in a society now where everyone has to feels they have the right to complain about everything.
Damn right.
That's for sure.
That's the society we live
in. I agree.
In, including,
we're complainers.
How dare you recline your own seat? Because I take ownership out of your seat. That's what people are claiming here. That seat is my seat the second it moves a millimeter in my direction. And you don't have that right. You
so
don't.
You have the right to violate my personal space.
It's not a violation.
Yeah, it is.
No, it isn't. You're still in your
Trust
seat.
Trust me, when people come back and they're like right in your face.
Jonas, I've been in that spot. I have been in like painful positions where my knees were straight.
And did you do anything?
No, I didn't do anything because it's not my I don't have the right to do that. It's your seat. I have to make an adjustment. So I adjust. That's what I do. Case dismissed. All right, so the Leafs are in action tonight. Freddie Anderson playing tonight.
He's back.
Was that a big story? Were you down at the skate?
Yeah. It was a little bit of a big story just because you didn't know, right? Like, Tuesday came.
Let me ask you something. What did he say? Like, what made him play tonight?
Do you want to know what the funny thing is? He refuses to talk about the injury. He refuses to give any information about how he's feeling, what was going on, whether he's had this before.
So before the scrum, you told don't ask about this?
No. He just says, I'm not going to get into that. It's been very weird. I get it. Like, maybe you just don't want to say anything, but I don't know. I don't have any information as to when it happened.
Well, nobody does.
What was going on.
Yeah, I don't see why he would have an issue saying it was on this hit, it was a neck. I've wanted to get back to 100%. He chose not to. Fine. You're playing, though. And now that you are playing, we have to make the assumption that you are at 100%.
Yeah.
And this will be a tough game tonight. Dallas, a good team. The Leafs got him a couple of weeks ago. The Leafs played really well down in Dallas a couple of weeks ago. And
I think they beat him 4-2.
Yeah, was it 5-2 maybe with an empty net? But it was 4-2 or 5-2. And Radulov not playing tonight. He scored both goals against them a couple of weeks ago. So you got an opportunity here.
Mm-hmm.
Got an opportunity to get 2 points and continue to roll a little bit. You're on a bit of a roll in terms of picking up points. They very rarely, the Maple Leafs, do make it easy on themselves. I mean, it's always got to be a closer game than it feels it should be. You know, that was on display on Tuesday against Arizona, most certainly on display Friday against Anaheim. Like, when was the last time they were up 5-0 in the third? And he just said, I can turn it off, it doesn't matter, they've got 2 points. They never do that. And I don't know if other teams are doing it. Maybe that's the nature of the sport right now.
Mm-hmm.
Parity is not just viewed within the standings, but viewed on the ice every night, where every game appears to be a little bit tighter. Or even if you're up a couple of goals, it could turn on you quickly and teams go on runs. But I can't remember the last time they were up huge and you're like, I don't even need to watch the third period. Where that used to happen in hockey all the time. Like the Leafs of the early 2000s, you played on, you know, you go to Atlanta and you're up 7-1 after the second period. It's over.
Game over, yeah.
It's over.
Not even 4-1, it's over.
4-1, it's over. Like, it just... So I don't expect an easy game at any point the rest of the way.
No, but do you think you were... Like, I heard the show yesterday, and you kind of called out those two wins a little bit? Anaheim and Arizona?
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't you think you have to factor in that they are a bit fragile right now?
Who, the Maple Leafs?
Yeah.
Like, they called out wins. We don't call out wins on the show. A win is a win, man.
He definitely did.
Well,
100%.
They should have. It should not have been as difficult. It shouldn't have been an overtime against Anaheim. Are you kidding
against
me?
Against Anaheim, no.
That's a joke.
But, like, they're not right.
But that's on them. That should be criticized.
Sure.
What am I supposed to do?
Yeah, I guess that's
go down
I don't
and hug
ever
them
criticize
all?
A victory. It might not have been a pretty thing, but a victory is a victory.
But if they are fragile.
Yeah.
Which I'm, I don't know why they would be.
Well, because it's been a rocky road.
But that's self-inflicted, is it not?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I guess.
Well, so
I guess what you're saying is the talent that we see on their roster hasn't showed itself on the year.
I think we're all just looking for, like, some completeness to it. It's like, okay, these are the pieces.
Yeah.
There's no Morgan Riley right now, but other than that, basically everybody's out there. It's not looking like a fine-tuned machine heading into the most important part of the season.
And that's what he told me, actually, like, right before 2020.
Who?
Riley. He said, like, what I want to see is us become exactly like that, like a machine. Where, like, these, like, Golden
State
in their heyday. St. Louis, where every night it's just going to be a clinic. And, like, you get a lead, like Brian said, and it's over.
Yeah, every night, every night, everybody knows their role, and they go out there, and it's like a fine-tuned machine.
Yeah.
And it adds up to a lot of wins.
But you know what's different right now? And I think you talked about this yesterday. For the very first time since he's been here, there is, like, pressure from behind Frederik Andersen. Like, there is another goalie. It's only been three
games.
There's
no pressure, man. Come on. Come on.
Well, Sheldon Keefe tried to douse that today, which
I think it's, like,
wise.
Yes, and it's not, like, super huge pressure. Like, Jack Campbell's played a few games.
Jack Campbell
fine.
Is in a situation where he can make Freddie Andersen say, if you want to take some time off, I'm happy to go in the net and I'll perform. And I'll be a go-to guy. I'll win
fine,
some games.
Fair.
And hopefully that'll piss you off a little bit. Like, but I honestly think Freddie Andersen said, well, I better get back in there and do my thing because there's enough Jack Campbell talk around here for everybody.
That's what I'm saying. That's fair.
Well, but they're also.
But that hasn't happened here before.
Yeah, we can't go all Joe from the bridge here and say, is there a goalie No, there's not.
There's not a goalie controversy, but what there is desperation to win. And you have to put your best team forward.
Mm-hmm.
So what could become a possibility? This is not an impossibility. I don't think it's probable. But let's say Freddie has a tough month in March, mm-hmm. which he has been prone to do.
Yeah.
You may find yourself in a situation where if Campbell is playing well and looks steady, the wise move is to play him.
Yeah. That's and all that, it is, and there's nothing wrong with that. And
but that is a significant difference. There has been at no point in the reign of Freddie Andersen in Toronto would you ever suggest, regardless of the way he had been playing, his stats, his style, his performance, his physique, you'd never say, I'm going with Sparks.
Curtis
or McElhinney
could have 46 saves.
Never
matter. Shutout wouldn't matter.
Never mattered. And as of right now, it doesn't matter. Campbell could have run off three straight shutouts, made 50 stops a game. The best play and the wise play is Freddie tonight.
Yeah.
But in 2 or 3 weeks, mm-hmm. you get down to, hey, you're a point in with 10 games to go. Freddie's really been struggling. Campbell's been really playing well. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's an impossibility that could be a conversation.
And that's good.
It's not good because you're only a point into the playoffs, which is, again, with the grand scheme of this whole season,
fair.
What I have been saying this whole time. You look at them on paper, this should be a playoff team to me. Based on watching hockey my whole life and playing it to a certain extent, I look at them and I say they're certainly good enough to get in. They should be in.
Mm-hmm.
Probably should be comfortably in. But when you actually watch them game in, game out, their lack of detail, their ability to just fade, maybe their fragility... To me, they're a coin flip if they get in or not. If you're a coin flip to get in, that you are what your record tells you are.
But you could also
generally coin flips to get in just get spanked in the first round.
Well, the way what we've seen out of them, this team has no shot at winning 16 games in the playoffs.
As of right now, no shot.
And
but let me ask you this. If that's the case right now, do you believe that they can get to a point and talk about what we just discussed, becoming that machine?
Not between now and the end of the year, unless something really drastic changes.
Don't you have to factor in, like, look at their record since Keefe took over. They're a top five team. Does that say nothing to you? Like,
that
you've seen too much?
Well, it couldn't have gotten any worse than what it was with Babcock. If they were just quit on him, they weren't playing.
I think it factors. It means something. I'll give them something, but there's at least five or six teams in the league that are better than them, like by a substantial margin.
Sure. Tampa, Boston, St. Louis, Washington,
Pittsburgh. Yeah, four of them are in their conference.
And then it starts to get like in the same group.
Yeah, then you're in the Florida, Islanders, Columbus, Philly, Carolina, Dallas, you know. Which is that's a good group. You're getting in. A couple of those teams will go on a run. Could be the Leafs. I'm not saying it's that they can't, but they have not shown me enough consistency, enough attention to detail, enough ability to just show up and say, you know, be professional and like we're winning tonight, and we're never going to give the opposition a chance to believe they're in it. They've never done that.
Do you think that's age? Because like I just look at the Raptors right now,
some of them,
they win a championship, and suddenly it's like they have this like moxie about them that we're just going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously last night was like a funky game.
It's a one-off. They couldn't hit shots.
But you feel that with St. Louis now. Washington.
Yeah.
Like it almost feels like once you win.
But here's what I keep hearing, and I'm glad you brought up Washington, because I keep hearing them used as a comparable. Well, they just couldn't get past pick. They were winning the President's Trophy. They weren't finishing with 97 points and barely getting in as a second wild card. The Leafs don't deserve that comparison. You can say Ovi and Backstrom and, you know, different guys. You can find them on the team. But you go back, Washington, yeah, they were choking, but they finished with like 112 points.
Mm-hmm.
And were comfortably in. And yeah, dominating.
They got 105 last year, didn't they?
100.
Who?
100?
The Leafs?
Yeah.
105 the year before.
Yeah. 105 the year before.
Yeah.
So it's not that much of a drastic difference. If you want to talk about 7 points as being that big of a difference, go ahead.
When did Washington, when they went all those runs and lost to Pittsburgh, when were they outside of the playoffs in the beginning of February? When did that happen?
Fair. But like you could say how many games?
Dismissed?
Could be.
How many games has their backup goaltending cost them this year? How many points? 5 to 10?
Probably a fair amount.
So add that on, and they're comfortably in a playoff spot, aren't they? How about that? Case dismissed.
Case wide open again.
Get out of here.
One?
Case wide open. All right.
Give it again.
Case dismissed. Paul Maurice has a new deal in Winnipeg. He's going to join us at about 4:40 this afternoon. Winnipeg's fighting to get in.
We'll ask him. These guys have been critical of some victories. Is that acceptable in the coaching walk of life?
Okay, so we'll see what Paul Maurice has to say about that. CJ Nikowski coming up, former MLB pitcher, MLB Network radio and TV broadcaster, will join us. We're going to play some audio from the Houston Astros. Their apology tour began today, and it was...
We're playing audio?
We're playing some audio. Jim Crane, I've got my eyes on the owner, Jim Crane of the Houston Astros. He is...
I'm sorry, that whole what I watched today... Everyone in that PR department should be relieved of their duties for the Houston Astros. For them to think that was the best way to go about it. What's our buddy's name down with the Leafs?
Steve Keogh?
He would have been throwing up watching that. He's the best in the business. He would have been throwing up watching that.
Yeah, it was gross. The owner, Dusty Baker, why he's even up there. He wasn't even here a week ago, let alone in 2017. But we'll tell you what happened down at the Houston Astros spring training facility. Who came out and spoke, what they had to say, and where baseball takes it from here. We'll get to that next. All right, so there are a number of members of the Houston Astros who stepped up to the podium today. They all spoke in the clubhouse after the initial press conference, if you want to call it that. Jim Crane, the owner, stepped up, who, even though he's won a World Series, his team's been in a couple of World Series, I know his name. I never knew what he looked like. Now everyone knows what he looks like, and everyone can't stand this guy. Altuve stepped up, Bregman stepped up, both of them speaking directly off the page, clearly scripted, not an ounce of sincerity, and Dusty Baker's up there for some reason.
He should not even have been out there. What the hell does he have to do with it?
He's just a plant. Everyone loves Dusty, and now you're there to kind of make us forget about what happened in 2017. Of course the apologies are hollow. Of course they're insincere. They're not actually apologetic that they did it. They're just sorry they got caught. So I'm not going to yell and scream about how stupid they sounded or how insincere it sounded. That's exactly what I expected. I don't even care to hear from them, quite frankly, because we know what happened with Houston down in 2017. We know they're not that contrite. We know they're not handing back the World Series. But you mentioned prior to the break, and you're not alone in this. A lot of people are pointing out the incompetence of the PR department. And I don't think it has anything to do with the PR department, because this owner, Jim Crane, is the issue. This guy is so arrogant.
I know, but
believes he's so bulletproof.
Do you think the PR guy would have said to Mr. Crane, like, you can't be doing this?
Probably. And do you know what I think he would have said? I'm the owner. I pay your bill. Get the hell out of here. I don't think he was prepared. I don't think he put any thought into it. I think he feels like he is holier than thou.
Wasn't prepared.
And above
think
approach.
About some of the statements that this idiot made.
Well, let's hear a couple, okay? But this will prove my point. This is where the issue is. This is why there's no contrition. I also think he's only catering to his own market, and I don't think people in Houston are overly embarrassed. They might be. I think the rest of baseball hates Houston, hates the Astros, and will for a long, long time. I'm not sure if people in Houston hate their own team. I think they might feel like the shine is off a little bit, but they're probably still going to show up to the park. And if they go back to a World Series, they're going to sell out, and they're going to celebrate if they win it. But here's what Jim Crane, the owner, had to say when he was asked about whether or not them cheating the way they did had a significant impact on the outcome of games back in 2017.
Our opinion is, that this didn't impact the game. We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that.
Did you say you feel like this didn't impact the game? And what do you mean by that?
I didn't say it didn't impact the game. Basically, you know, as the commissioner said in his report, he's not going to go backwards. It's hard to determine how it impacted the game, if it impacted the game, and that's where we're going to leave it.
Yeah, so that's exactly why the players aren't going to come out and say sorry, and it did impact the game. The owner of the team saying didn't impact the game. And then immediately contradicts himself by saying, actually, I didn't say that.
Sorry, did you say that you didn't think it had an impact?
Right. So I can tell you exactly where the arrogance is coming from. I can tell you exactly where the lack of contrition
and apologies.
That's
the most idiotic thing I've ever heard in my life.
Well, here's what he said, Jim Crane, when he was asked about if he should face any repercussions.
You know, no, I don't think I should be held accountable. I'm here to correct it, and I'm here to take this team forward with Dusty and James. And as I said, it won't happen again on my watch.
Well, there's no way he didn't know that it was going on. It's his team, but because he's an owner, can't fire an owner.
I was just saying to Jonas, everyone that was involved in that should not be playing baseball for a whole year. Imagine no one being suspended for that. That is ridiculous.
It's an absolute joke, but talk to Rob Manfred about that. Here's former MLB pitcher. You can hear him on MLB Network Radio, CJ Ditkowski. What did you make of the apology tour that began today down in Houston?
Yeah, I mean, it really was kind of started a little bit earlier than that when they had their fan fest or winter warm-up, whatever they call it, a couple of weeks ago. It did not go particularly well, and so Jim Crane promised us that players would address it in spring training. The press conference was not good. The stuff that happened in the clubhouse was definitely better, but it just seems like no matter what anybody says, we're still left with more questions. Like even Carlos Correa, who did a pretty nice job today in the clubhouse, being accountable. One of the things he said, though, was that we didn't cheat at all in 2018 and 19.
Come on.
And that's not what the report said. The report said that they did. And so just when you feel like you finally found the adult in the room that was going to be accountable and talk about what happened, he then says something that is complete contradiction to what the report says. So now we're left again at wondering and having more questions. And I'm not going to say I feel bad for these guys, but I feel bad for the guys that are in that clubhouse that weren't a part of it in 17. Are probably going to get real tired of this real fast, being a constant. But until we get to that point where we actually don't have any more questions, it's unfortunately going to keep happening.
Well, CJ, that leads me into my question. What was said today was ridiculous, but do you think there could be anything said today, anything possibly said, that the reporters could have left and everybody said, okay, thanks for that, now we could move on? Like, is there anything possible that these players or coaches or that owner could have said where everyone could have been, like, even remotely satisfied?
Probably not. The best they could have done, and I don't even know if this is a reality, I think because of how we're hung up on everything from the postseason. We know they cheated. But then even the guys that did it, again, other guys that did a pretty good job of talking about it, like even Josh Reddick today, and he says, I don't think I owe anybody an apology. I don't think, you know, it really affected the postseason that much, which was said a couple of times. Like, that's the part, like, because it keep going on and on. And so would it take somebody to stand up and say, we did this. You know what we did. It was all laid out. And, yes, we stole signs electronically. We went above and beyond what we know was acceptable, even in our own little kind of unwritten code. It happened in the postseason. We know, of course, that's going to help you. If you did it all year, you did it because it helped you. If you did it in the postseason, yes, it helped us in the postseason. But then you could go ahead and say, but the commissioner made his decision, and they're not taking any World Series away. It just seems like everyone who's even willing to apologize to any degree that we're willing to accept, they draw the line at the postseason. They dig in their heels, and they refuse to admit that there's anything tainted. And that's what happens, I think, when you get your identity wrapped up in the wins and losses in sports. I mean, it's tough not to as an athlete, but as you listen to Jim Crane there, the idea of that World Series trophy that he is so proud of, that is displayed at his ballpark, and I'm sure other trinkets around in his office and everything else, and the rings and all of it, they don't want any of that to be tainted. So their apology stops when it comes to the postseason, because they're just not willing to give that up at all.
What about Verlander? He's a guy, I don't know if he spoke today or addressed this.
He did.
What was his comments? I mean,
yeah, it was interesting. One of the things he said, he kind of got called out for it right away. You know, remember, he came to that team just for the last couple of months and pretty much admitted he picked up on what would happen, what was going on and what was happening. And the only thing he said was, I wish I would have said more. And somebody goes, well, what did you say? And then he got tongue-tied because he said nothing. Of course he didn't say anything. And listen, I don't blame him. This is going to sound contradictory. I know some people may not love it, to kind of what I've been saying about this. I don't blame him for not saying anything. I mean, the reality is that you see things go on in the clubhouse, or sometimes you're suspicious of things that go on in the clubhouse, that as much as we wish everyone had great character and would stand up for any bad thing that they saw, that's probably not a reality in sports. It happens once in a while, and it's nice to see when it does, but I wouldn't expect Justin Verlander to really say anything in that spot. And so at the same time, please stop saying you wish you would have said more, because I think you're lying. Because I think if we could go back in time, you would not say a word. And I know it's kind of tough to do that exercise, but I don't think there's anybody outside of the guys that have been fired and suspended would actually do anything different. And Jose Altuve is in probably one of the most difficult spots of the group, and it's of his own doing, but he's not giving back an MVP. He's not giving back a World Series ring. He's not giving back that $440,000 or $80,000 World Series share that he got. He's not giving back the $168 million contract that came after the fact. But they did really well for themselves, and they could say all the right things, and I understand why they would, but I doubt that there's a player involved at all that, if they were sincere, if we could give them the truth serum, would actually go back in time and change anything.
With C.J. Nitkowski, and I would argue that's the only way for complete redemption and potential for you to flip the script to the point where you actually get people jumping back on the bandwagon. Because, you know, America, Canada, we love an apology tour. We love a redemption story. If they came out today and said, we're giving back the 2017 World Series and we're going to go out there and win it in 2020 clean, watch. It's the biggest story in pro sports. They go out and do it. I guarantee you, by the time they got to the playoffs, people would be like, I love this team. I love this team. And they had that opportunity, but they probably don't trust their abilities enough. And like you said, then it becomes a slippery slope where maybe they got to give some money back and who knows where we draw the line. But if they did that today, bombshell, we're giving it back. Give it to the Dodgers or just make it blank. 17 didn't happen. But I'm telling you, we're going to win in 2020. That would have been an incredible scene. And if they won it, I think they would be hugely popular this time next year.
They do a lot better than they are right now. As a Rangers broadcast, I can tell you, I wouldn't be in love with the Astros at all, but I would respect it.
True enough.
To some degree. But you're right, and I just don't think that Jim Crane's willing to do that. You know, I mean, I was thinking about this today, right? I mean, obviously, it's so cool to be able to win a World Series. Justin Verlander's been at this for a long time. He'll be starting his 16th year in the big leagues. He's got one World Series title. And he's, you know, he's got two Cy Young awards, and you see how he gets sometimes. He was upset that year he lost it and finished in second. To Rick Porcello, he very easily could have finished second. This year, he's got, what, I think, three or four second and third place finishes under his belt. Like he loves that hardware. I don't have a problem with that. I think it's great. I mean, obviously, a guy that's looking at a potential Hall of Fame career here when it's all said and done. But he's got one World Series. He ain't giving it back because he may never get another one. And so the idea of really standing up and, you know, and saying, you know, we didn't earn this, we don't deserve it, it sounds nice, and I wish that was something that, you know, probably could come to fruition, but it's not going to happen. And do you wear that ring out ever? Like, can you ever walk?
No, exactly.
That's the only one that he has. Could Jim Crane wear that to the office? Can he wear that to a really big meeting that he has when he's bringing in sponsors, you know, title sponsors, and looking for some big dollars from people? Because, I mean, that's a nice thing to have, because, you know, that's something you can't really buy no matter how rich you are. The idea of a World Series ring, you're counting on others and trying to put a team together, and we've seen plenty of high-payroll teams not win a World Series. Can he ever wear that in front of anybody? Can anybody who owns a 17 ring ever wear it in front of somebody without being embarrassed?
You mentioned Altuve. What kind of numbers do you predict or do you think that he's going to have this year? Him, Bregman, these guys that, not just because of the cheating scandal, but just because of the spot. Like, every time these guys go up to bat, the microscope is just going to be massive. What do you expect to see from these guys?
Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, it takes a little bit of a conscience to feel guilty, right? And we wonder whether or not they actually have one. And will that affect them at all? Jose Altuve is a great player. I mean, obviously that year he had in 17 was his best year, far and away. We saw the power start to increase with him. He had a monster power season last year. He's still going to be fine. He's still going to put up big numbers. It's almost like steroids, right? It's like, okay, you're a really good player, but that made you great. But that made you even better into your, in the case of PEDs, right, into your the mid to upper 30s, right? Jose Altuve is a really good big leaguer. Was he only an MVP because of a year that we know for sure that he was cheating? I mean, he had 200 hit seasons, three of them in a row prior to that. It was the power that kind of came later, and maybe, you know, the idea of knowing what pitch was coming helped a little bit more. But I think those guys are going to put up really good numbers, and part of it, and I don't blame them for thinking this way, but I believe that they have to not care. They have to not care that people are, you know, disrespecting them, living a booed like crazy on the road. And the mindset, really, in order for them to continue what they've done for me, is I don't really care. Screw you guys. I'm going to do what I do. And that's the only way that they could be successful. If you're ridden with guilt and feel bad, yeah, that could affect their performance. I don't think it will.
You can hear him on the Texas Rangers broadcast. Also, MLB Network Radio. He is former MLB pitcher CJ Nitkowski. Always great catching up with you. Thank you for doing this today, CJ.
Absolutely. My pleasure. You guys have a great day.
You too. There he is. CJ Nitkowski. We'll get into this a little bit later in the afternoon, but from a marketing standpoint, we've had this discussion forever. Are dynasties good for hockey, baseball, basketball? Is a team this hated potentially good for baseball?
There was a massive article written on the Toronto Maple Leafs back when Darcy Tucker and Shane Corson, they're the most hated team in the NHL. Hated.
Got to see it, man. Like, people, some people, they want to watch a team they love. Some people love watching a team they hate. Hate watch is a real thing in sports and society.
Just like you. People hate what you have to say. Some people love it. But they want to hear what you
have
to say.
That's right. Call me the Houston Astros of radio.
Case dismissed.
Case dismissed. Paul Maurice, next. Quick update from the Genesis Invitational. My boy, Matt Kuchar, 7-under par today. Feeling it?
Can't stand him in his shoes.
I love Skechers. They are spectacular shoes.
Yeah. Save some girls for the rest of us.
Yeah. Corduroy pants, Skechers shoes. NHL coaches, like, why aren't they wearing running shoes on the bench? Why can't they wear running shoes?
I think some do. Well, we've got an NHL coach in the line. Bring him in. Let's ask him.
All right. He's been around for a while. Former Maple Leaf head coach. Now longtime Winnipeg Jets head coach. He's got a new deal in Winnipeg. Here's Paul Maurice. Paul, have you ever worn running shoes on the bench in the NHL?
Yeah, once, I think, and it was for the outdoor game, and I just couldn't get around it. Always right. There's a bunch of guys that do. Like, Tommy Webster used to wear the black Reeboks. Oh, might even remember that. It's just not a good look in a suit. Like, it just doesn't work. I couldn't pull it off.
Yeah, it's a tough move. It's a very tough move. But, like, a coach, I guess sometimes they'll pan from above, right? And they'll catch your shoes, but...
No, but I'm telling you, truly, this is a true story. Jimmy Rutherford, I'm looking for some advice when I get my first job as a head coach for the Detroit Junior Red Wings. And I'm thinking I'm going to get something really profound out of him, you know? And he says to me, wear good shoes. Now, I'm just staring at the man. Now, we're talking about a guy that's in a Hall of Fame as a general manager, so we know he knows what he's talking about. And he says he remembers being a goalie in Detroit, and I won't mention the coach's name, but he's standing in front of him, chewing everybody's butt right off. And all Jimmy could think of, the guy looked like a slob because his shoes looked terrible.
So yeah, you don't take the guy seriously.
So he said, make sure you wear good shoes. And I try to, just on that alone. I think he's right.
It's pretty good advice.
No running shoes, man. I can't do it.
Okay.
It's good advice because you think about it. Most of the time when a coach is walking through the locker room, they're not like, they're just heads are down a little bit. You see the shoes. And if you got a garbage pair of dress shoes on, you're going to think the guy's a clown.
Yeah, he's not professional. He doesn't get his operation tight.
Yeah.
That's right.
I always brought that up a bunch of times. Like, we won't name the guy, but there used to be a coach that would wear, like, garden gloves on the ice during practice.
Sure. Yeah, Ronnie Rolston.
Okay.
Well, you got to get to a level of Scotty Bowman before you can pull that off.
Yeah. Well, he lasted 2 months.
Well, I'm when I'm coaching the junior Red Wings, Scotty Bowman's coaching the Red Wings, and I used to go out and watch his practices all the time. And he's standing on the side of his true story. You know those kind of horns on New Year's, those kind of silver horns that you blow? Well, he's using that to change line. So, like, there's like 11 Hall of Fame players on the ice, and this guy's got a party favor that he's doing to get them to change their lines. And that was another reminder for me, don't ever, ever try that until you got about 6 Stanley Cups in the bank.
Yeah.
He's the only guy that could pull off Lang skates, gray dress pants, and a party favor to change lines.
Mo, you got your new deal done. Congrats on that. How does that transaction go down? Is that through just you and the owner? You got an agent that does that?
Yeah, I don't use an agent, and I haven't more because, as you know, I'm in my first 4 or 5 over the gym, and it was a pretty simple deal. So we met at the over the course of the summer, and the idea was we all wanted it to happen. I wanted to be the coach, and then we, you know, might happen in September. And then, as you guys saw, kind of all hell breaks loose, right? Butt flees, and we just had a whole host of things. So it was never really a concern. And then it just kind of got tied up around the All-Star break. But there wasn't a whole lot of time to it put into it. They kind of said what they wanted to talk about in the deal. I told them what I wanted. They made one offer. I accepted, and that was the end of it.
That seems pretty easy. I mean,
you
that,
know what?
That works.
In truth, Brian, seriously, so this is my 4th contract with Winnipeg. As far as negotiations, it would have, the entirety would have been about 10 minutes on all 4.
Wow.
It's just they're really fair and they're right on, and it was easy deals.
With Paul Maurice, who again has a new deal in Winnipeg, you've mentioned a couple of guys that you used to look up to and you'd look to for advice in Scotty Bowman and Jim Rutherford. Are you still either seeking out advice, or are you still trying to learn and pick up on different things from other coaches and other members of the hockey world?
I would say more now than ever. Like, this game changed drastically in 2006, but the players have changed drastically in the last 4 or 5 years, and that also coincides with, over time, your network gets bigger. Pete DeBoer is as good a friend as I have. He's got lots of NHL experience. There's lots of guys out there now that I've coached with. So we are reaching out, trying to find new ways to reach these guys, make sure that you know, our styles and the evolution of the game, so many things are changing so fast that you've got to change, and you've got to be aware of what's going on out there. And you do. You need people to bounce ideas off and people that you trust.
Mo, there's always ups and downs, but can you remember a year where there's so many drastic kind of ups and downs, almost with every team? It seems like 7-game heaters and then 7-game losing streaks, and it's all throughout the league. Can you remember seeing anything like it, and what do you think's behind that?
I don't know the answer. The easy one would be, if we've got this kind of parity thing going on in the NHL, that we're all fairly close to each other, and you lose 1 or 2 or 3 guys off trouble really, really fast. So I think that may have something to do with it, but I don't think I don't know the answer, but I agree 100%. When I look at all of the things that have just happened to our hockey team, like I got 10 seasons worth going on, right? From you know, all the changes we had this summer, then the guy that you thought that was absolutely going to have to anchor your blue line doesn't come to training camp. Man, we had car accidents. We had people leave for other leagues. We've had cancer diagnosis. We've had just a whole host of things packed into this year, and the injury that we faced. I've never seen a year like this before.
Paul, I want to go back and jog your memory. What was it like to coach 21-year-old Jeff O'Neill?
Well, you know what? I was talking to somebody earlier today about the difference between the rookies then and the rookies now. And the biggest change by far, when O came into the league, in a lot of ways, the players handled him, right? Like, his mentors weren't me as the head coach. His mentors were Shanahan, who was probably on his left wing for a while. He had Nelson Emerson there, but it's Andrew Castles. Those are the guys that are teaching him the game and all the things around the game. And the coach, I mean, the coach is involved in the team game and motivating the team, maybe talking to a guy as an individual, but it is way different now, right? These young guys come in with a version of their entourages. They got five or six people that are very involved in their daily lives and the opportunities they should be given and all that. So it's a way different animal. You're more involved individually with these young players because and what's also different is for Ole, young players didn't come in and make an impact because they couldn't. They weren't physically strong enough. I mean, it was a grinding game, right? Like, I remember Joe Thornton playing in Boston, and Pat Burns was getting beaked because Joe was on the fourth line and playing about 6 minutes a night, and Pat said, listen, this kid's not ready to play. I think Joe was only about 200 pounds at the time. He said, he's got to put on another 20 pounds before he can play with the men. So it was much harder for a young player in Jeff's age to come in and make an impact. Like, if you took him now with the skill set that he had, because he had a great shot and he could really, really efficient, smooth skater, he would have been a star very early and a big producer in this game now.
There's more than 20 put on, though, now, Paul.
But you hide it so well. You hit it then, too. So that was pretty
good. Well, another commonality is, you know, all love sitting in his room playing video games 25 years ago. You'd never hit the town. You'd never have to worry about him on the road or anything.
No, but you know what? They wouldn't have let him then. Like, he wouldn't have been able to get away with that. He'd have been pulled out of that hotel room. Come on, you're going out. Like, it was a different time. So there are things that are much better about the game now, for sure. And then there's a bunch of things that we miss about the game. Like, the players needed each other more than, like our fourth line when Ole was there, we had Daniels, Jansons, and Chase, right? Like three tough players. If you lost two or three games in a row, those guys started worrying about their jobs, and they were in that room and part of that room, so they were protecting. You know, we got to get it going here because these guys might be in trouble, and they'd be in, you know, the first 10 minutes of that game, two of them were getting into a fight. But there was a connection between the players back then that was different that we do miss a little bit now.
With Paul Maurice, you've detailed what you guys have gone through as a team all year. We've been talking about it consistently ever since the first day of camp. How do you try to use that as motivation as opposed to a distraction? It's got to be difficult.
Yeah. It started this summer, so you lose three of your defensemen and Brandon Tanev. So you know you've got a hole back there, but you know you can lean on Buff. You got Morrissey. You think Pionk's going to come in. And then you got Kulikov there, but you got a couple wild cards, Niku Pullman, some of these other guys, and then Buff leaves. So now you've got a real focus on, fellas, we got a real hole back here, and we got to fix it. So you really need your drivers. So let's just look at Scheifele and Wheeler. Both of these guys, big point guys. Wheels has 2 years of 91 points. They're going to have to make a sacrifice in their game for us to have any chance. So that was the critical piece. And then we took another big hit. So Brian Little goes down. He's played seven games for us. Now I got to take Wheeler and put him at center on a different line without the firepower that he's used to playing with. So there's a big hit. Proud guy. Gets paid well and wants to produce for this team, so he makes that sacrifice. Now, Mark Scheifele's going, I've just lost my wingman, who I was really, really good with, and Patty Liney's great, but he's young, and Kyle Connor's young. So all of these kind of, the Josh Morrissey lost his partner, so our leadership all had to make kind of that big sacrifice, and that is the tipping point for our team. Were we going to survive that? So they bought in. We got to grind a heck of a lot harder. We're going to have to defend. We're not great at it. We know that. So we got to put a lot of energy into it. It means most of these guys' point production is going to come down, and that's a sacrifice. And listen, it's on TV every night. These guys are proud guys. They want to put up numbers. They want to win. They want to produce. So it is a sacrifice for them. And then keeping the faith. That's been the challenge for us because we got 6 to 8 guys out of our lineup. Seemingly for the last month and a half, we lose four in a row going into the break. So the emotions are down. And now we've come out of the break and played as hard as we've played all year. I'm glad we won some games just for that payoff alone so you can kind of keep the faith. But I guess if we're looking at the silver lining, is we still got a real young team here. And if they can learn how hard you got to grind for us to just have a chance to win, when you look at the timing of the trade deadline, we're not going to make one trade up front and get three top nine forwards back. We'll get Perreault. We hope we get Brian Little back, and we're going to get Adam Lowry back, and that's going to change our forward group. So the reinforcements are kind of on the horizon. We still got two really important weeks before they probably get back to us, but we just got to get them to keep the faith long enough so we can get a little bit healthier.
Well, we're all rooting for you here in Toronto. We look forward to seeing the rest of the journey out there in Winnipeg. Best of luck, and congrats on the new deal. We always appreciate you finding time for us.
All right, guys. Thanks very much. Have a great day.
There he is, Paul Maurice.
If you ever shake your head when I ask a question, I'm going to give you the stone cold stunner right on this desk.
For what?
I said about the new deal with Paul, and you were like...
Well, because here's... No. I'll just give you the explanation.
You get a stone cold stunner.
I'll give you the explanation. Because he was, I wanted to ask you, I wanted to leap off the answer he was just giving.
Okay, well, you didn't. I asked the next
exactly.
question.
Yeah.
So if you shake your head again, it's stone cold stunner, and your forehead goes off the glass.
Okay, try it. Do you know what I'll do to you in return?
I'll jump on the table, and I'll stone
cold. Go ahead. Give it a shot, because we'd go viral. It would probably be great for the show.
That's good.
I actually give you permission to give it a shot. I'll stop you in midair with a rock bottom.
You guys have been asking really good questions in the interviews so far.
Well, you haven't asked anything,
so
we kind of have to.
Yeah, because you're carrying it. I don't need to.
Yeah.
Well, that's my view.
Paul Maurice is always an unbelievable interview.
You know, that's a good point, because I think you're doing nothing, but if you have nothing good to say, then just sit there.
No, I have lots of good questions to ask, but you had questions, so I let you ask them, and they were good.
I had to wave off Jonas a couple of times. He didn't threaten to put me in a camel clutch. Professionalism.
It was going to be the people's
case
elbow.
Dismissed. Hour two up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.
This summer, give your child an experience of a lifetime at Muskoka Woods. This overnight summer camp is a place like no other. At Muskoka Woods, you choose your own adventure, featuring over 60 summer arts and athletics activities to choose from. Water sports, media arts, high ropes courses, and so much more. Staff from around the world will ensure your kids learn new skills, make friends, and create memories that will last a lifetime. Muskoka Woods on Lake Rosso, a summer camp experience like no other. Visit MuskokaWoods.com. You've been listening to Overdrive, powered by Muskoka Woods. This summer, let your child experience an overnight camp like no other. Let the adventures begin at MuskokaWoods.com.